This is tape two of the Captain Charles Burroughs interview on the 31st of October, 2001, in his home. It's back on.
Right.
And we'll give it a few minutes and we'll check it.
Okay. Yeah, I was speaking here of the Science and Technology Fellowship year, in addition to doing that staffing duty at the Commerce Department. It also was a broadening experience as far as we'd have weekly meetings around town, either at Brookings or various. There were about 16 in the program, and from various departments. In addition to the outfit that I was from, some even from outside of Commerce Department, other agencies. So it was a very broadening government service type of experience, and we had a week on Capitol Hill where we made the rounds there and met with various committees and so forth on various topics. So then that ran its course, and my ticket had come up again to go back to sea. And Harley Nygren, you're going to interview him tomorrow, I understand, called me into his office. He was head of the Corps at that time.
This has now become the NOAA Corps?
And now we're the NOAA Corps. Well, let's see. We're in... it's still ESSA. Or what year are we in there? Yeah, we're in... No, it's in NOAA. NOAA was formed in 1970, and he was the head of the NOAA Corps. And this... We're talking 1972, the spring of 72. And again... Getting a little aside here about the organization, you'll get a lot more from this, about this from Harley probably, but maybe a different slant, but essentially when they formed NOAA, also by executive order, Congress was interested in a wet NASA, and this was the administration's version of what Congress wanted, and they were able to do what I call landmark executive order reorganization by reaching outside the Department of Commerce, taking the Sea Grant program from the National Science Foundation. The Great Lakes Survey came over from the Corps of Engineers, made them mad. The Bureau of Commercial Fisheries became the National Marine Fisheries NMFS service. The Weather Bureau got its name changed to National Weather Service. The Coast and Geodetic Survey lost its identity, became the National Ocean Survey. I think initially it was the National Ocean Service. Then they got smart and called it, retained at least the survey aspect of it, National Ocean Survey. Anyway, that's organizational stuff, and we'll get on to the more interesting field aspect here now, going back to sea.
Here we are.
When I got into the office there with Admiral Nygren, he says, well, he says, Charlie, I'd known him before, he says, we got three ship situations here I want you to consider. I'm going to almost give you a choice. He says, we got the oceanographer, and they need an executive officer on there because the present executive officer is not cutting it. I won't go into the details of what. Why that was. It's a personnel thing. Or he says, you can go aboard the surveyor as an executive officer. They need an XO. And then there's a third ship that I can't tell you about right now, but you're going to find out before long. He had me wondering about that one. But as we talked it over, and I knew that he was very fond of the surveyor. I think he was one of its... for skippers. I said to them, well, I said, Harley, I kind of like to go aboard a ship that's got wooden decks. And I knew that the surveyor had wooden decks, so I said, I'll take the surveyor. So I joined the surveyor up at Kodiak.
You were a commander then? Or?
By then I was commander, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a fellow named Boyce Watkins was the skipper. Captain Watkins. And the previous XO had already left the ship, so they were kind of hurting, as Harley had indicated. He'd gone off to school. And the third officer was doing both field works and XO duties. So as I came aboard in Kodiak that July day, whenever it was, they were probably tied up there during the 4th of July weekend. The XO met me at the gangway. He says, "Boy," he says, "we're glad to see you." He says, "Captain said when you come aboard, bring them right up to the cabin."
Hang on. Right. Okay.
And they were, the surveyor was doing some work in the Gulf of Alaska using we had a helicopter pad on there, and we would hire locally a chopper pilot to assist us when we needed it to get to a mountaintop or something with a station, control station, or some remote beach location that was difficult to get to by a small boat. Well, I got the cabin, and Captain, who was obviously very fond of his ship, said to me, "Well," he says, "yeah, we really need your help here with some personnel problems we've got on board. Plus, I want to give this present third officer a break. He's been doing a lot of it since Phil left a month or so ago. But," he says, "something that I want you to understand." He says, "I know you've been on quite a few ships, but," he said, kind of laid it all out on the table for me, which I appreciated, especially after the fact. He says, "During this first month," he says, I want you to watch everything I do on the bridge very carefully. Taking the ship alongside, taking her out, navigating one thing or another. He says, "Because the next month," he says, "I want you to do all that stuff. And then," he says, "in September, I'm going on leave." So I got my marching orders, and it paid off to know what, right up front, what, where I stood to the captain. And everything happened pretty much that way. I got a lot more familiar with ship handling during that 3 months, I'll have to tell you. And that was a single screw ship, too, so it wasn't the easiest one to bring alongside, not like the twin screw Mount Mitchell. Well, I'd only been on there about a month or two, and the word comes off across that this third ship looms on the horizon, the Fairweather, and it was going to need a new skipper. And that was going to be it.
When you say it loomed on the horizon.
Well, Harley had mentioned
ship.
He had mentioned the third ship, but never by naming it. But it came. I came to realize that during my stint on the surveyor.
This is
the
U.S. Coast and U.S. CGS, or what? Well, do you designate the ships now? The NOAA ship?
NOAA? Yeah, they're NOAA ships now. So it'd be the NOAA ship Fairweather, and it was the NOAA ship surveyor.
U.S. NOAA. Or you just
NOAA ship, NOAA, I believe.
NOAA,
yeah.
Okay.
Right. And depending on the size of the ship, they had various designations. MSS for a medium-sized survey ship.
Okay.
OSS for
like
oceanographic
BDE
survey
and
ship.
And
yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
SS.
Right. So in any case, I did out my tour there. And when the skipper did go on leave, as he said he would in September, we were back in Seattle, and we had a survey to do offshore along the California coast, what they called a CMAP survey. So it was all deep ocean work, which, you know, is not quite as complicated as working in closer along shore. So it was, I won't say it was easy, but it was a less of a challenge, let's say, than it would have been if we'd still been in Alaska, because that can be pretty tricky working up there in Alaska and tight with all that tide and so forth, currents. In any case, that took me over to the Fairweather, where I spent the next 2 years as skipper of the Fairweather, and that was the best sea duty
I ever had. Because when you're skipper of the ship, you know, you run the show. And
it's great being captain if things go good.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, I had a very strong wardroom, and it worked out well. We did surveys in Cook Inlet two summers. Also got to resurvey Glacier Bay. That was a very interesting mm-hmm. survey operation. We did a survey in Hawaii and some work off the California coast. Oh, I was going to tell you, and in connection with the Fairweather, I guess I should tell you the story about, get a kick out of this as a salvage person. One of the imports, I think it was the 4th of July, while we were working Cook Inlet, we were doing a survey of Kamishak Bay and Lower Cook Inlet below the Forelands. We chose to go up to Anchorage and swing on the hook there over the 4th of July weekend, just run boats back and forth because it was difficult to get dock space up in Anchorage with the Sealand operation up there. And I noticed when it got time to leave that the anchor was coming up mighty slow. And the longer we cranked away, it seemed like the more concerned I was getting. Until we finally got the flukes of the anchor just breaking water, and I could see why it was such a slow process.
Had another anchor chain?
We snagged a lost Sealand anchor chain, and that thing was enormous. So I sent my executive officer in on the boat, small boat, and said, we need to find a salvage guy. And I don't remember who the guy was, but when he heard that we'd found that chain, he just let out a big grin. He says, yeah, I'll be out there at such and such a tide tomorrow morning and get you free. So the first thing I did when the guy came aboard was get him in the cabin and wonder how in the world, I hadn't even told Washington yet this thing had happened, how in the world I was going to get out of this financially. And as we were drinking coffee, I broke the news to him. I said, you know, somewhere along the way, I'm going to have to let the headquarters know what it's going to cost me to get this problem resolved. And we got talking about the organization, and he happened to be a good friend of Bob White's second in command. What was his name? Pollock. I think the name of a fish. I think his name was Pollock. Oh, yeah, he used to barnstorm all over Alaska up here. He says, don't worry about the cost. He says, you see that coffee mug over there? He says, you just give that to me, and I'll be fine. Well, of course, he was smiling all the way to the bank because he'd been looking for that chain for I don't know how long. He knew it was down there, but we found it for him.
Oh, so you did him a favor.
You sure did. So that was compensation enough. And so that was a little side story there. I don't think I ever did tell Washington that I got into that jam. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so that did out that rounded out my last sea tour, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, it was pretty much staff duty. In Washington. I did come into an interesting job, though. When I came back from Alaska in 76, I was assigned, they needed some help with some environmental, I had made it known that I was interested in working with other agencies and with some of our products. And one of the new organizations in NOAA was the Environmental Data and Information Service. Or environmental, yeah, I think that's what it was called, EDIS. And they were doing some assessments work for other agencies, and one came along, a job for the Department of Energy, in doing some environmental assessment for the purpose of building the Strategic Petroleum Reserve in the Gulf of Mexico. And this involved baseline surveys of what it looked like before they were proposing to dump the brine that was being leached out of the salt domes ashore into the ocean. And that worked into quite a situation where for several years I was the you might call it the funnel or the funds between Department of Energy to NOAA to do this environmental assessment work. What started out as a $20,000, $30,000 baseline study ended up, by the time I finished with the project, I think we had brought over about $20 million. Mm-hmm. And not through no planning of my own, but it was interesting as I analyzed it at the time that I turned it over, the job, to another person. The way those funds were expended was about one-third, one-third, one-third. One-third came into NOAA using some of our ships to do some of the survey work. A third went to universities, such as Texas A&M, for some of the monitoring work that we set up down there. And a third went to the private sector for hiring SAI or somebody to go down there and do some of that work. So it just worked out that way. No prior planning. And that was a very good experience. And then it was from there that I got the call to be the chief of staff for the head of the NOAA Corps, who was Admiral Nygren's replacement, Kelly Taggart. Admiral Taggart.
Oh, you were chief of staff
in the personnel office. So I essentially ended up in personnel work. And
Admiral Taggart, what year did you go to? Did you finish your ship's tour, I guess?
75. Mm-hmm. Well, 74, but then I was operations officer in at our Pacific Marine Center for a year prior to coming back here in 76.
Admiral Taggart's, what's his first name?
Kelly. He's retired out on the, overlooking the Missouri River near Jefferson City. Interesting guy. Started out his career driving steamboats, I think, up and down the river.
Hmm. So you never got back to the Arctic in
so,
capacity at all, or
only actually through the Explorers Club, interestingly enough. Colonel Dribben, Bill Dribben, do you know him?
Mm-hmm.
He took it upon himself to organize a trip to Thule to bestow upon the commanding officer of the base a plaque, and I think it was 1991, to commemorate Bert Balkan's setting up the bases during World War II through the Arctic to get planes across. And so he was trying to get a group together, and the group whittled down just he and I, and we went up there on a MATS flight from McGuire Air Force Base that summer. And so that was kind of an interesting, it's just like a week or something like that. Although we got there, and the first thing the commanding officer said to us was, well, he says, we thought we'd go up there and spend a day or two and come back out. He says, there's not another flight out of here for almost a week. He says, but he says, I got a few things you guys might like to do. So he lined us up with some interesting activities, including a flight up to Alert. So mm-hmm. I did get to the northernmost post, I guess you'd call it, of the Canadian archipelago there, at least to see the place. But that was more of a tourist type thing, almost. But we got well taken care of by the people at Thule. And I did go on a marine expeditions tour in the summer of 1996 from Churchill, boarded the ship at Churchill, up through Hudson Bay, out the strait around Baffin Island. We were supposed to put into several ports on Baffin Island, but it was a heavy ice year. And so we gained a day on the coast of Greenland and went up to Disco and up around that area.
Who was your expedition leader?
Well, it was one of the Russian ships, they've been using.
I know. I've lectured for a marine expedition for 7 years.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. They just went bankrupt,
Yeah, I know.
Business.
Yeah.
Bill Davis?
No.
Andrew Crossan?
No.
96. Cheney boy?
We had, when you say expedition leader.
Well, he's the guy that directs the shore parties, that tells the ship where to go to anchor, and he puts, basically he's in charge of the Zodiacs, the lectures.
Yeah. You know, I just sort of put all those people in one basket. We had about four or five lecturers.
Yeah, well, the guy that leads it all is, I'm naming the guys, they don't, sometimes they don't even know much about the Arctic or the Antarctic.
They're just logistics
people.
They
know how to run Zodiacs, they know how, where the stopping points are, and they depend on the lectures. As a lecturer, I kind of interfaced with all the tourists.
What am I doing?